I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. Ahmed Abbas is a soldier. He quit the Iraqi army before the war began. His brother Mohammed wasn't so lucky. Mohammed was killed by an American cluster bomb in a small town north of Baghdad. That left Ahmed responsible for supporting some 16 people. So when the U.S. Army offered him work as a street corner security guard at $100 a month, he took the job. He carries a gun and wears a blue shirt with the letters FPF, Federal Protection Force, on an armband. But now he's having second thoughts. He says his American supervisor, a Captain Fisher, is going to cut his wages to $60 a month, unless Ahmed's willing to take on a much riskier job.
They want us to make raids with them, to attack houses, to be in the front. So to be at the beginning of the strikes.
So this Captain Fisher said, we're going to cut your salary and we want you to come on these raids against different houses in Iraq. We want to put you up front, and if you don't agree to that, then you'll be fired from your job. Is
exactly,
that right?
Exactly.
So if you're told that you have to go on raids or you're going to be fired, what will you do? Will you quit or will you stay and do the raids?
No, I'm better.
We'll quit.
You'll quit.
If we want to do such actions, we would have remained in the army of Saddam. Why would we quit the army? It was because of that.
It goes without saying that soldiers like Ahmed Abbas would be a lot happier taking their orders from an Iraqi. But 6 months ago, Ambassador Bremer dismissed all members of the Iraqi military, generals, admirals, and on down. It's clear now that the U.S. Army's having trouble keeping itself safe or bringing order to a number of Iraqi cities. And there is growing pressure in Washington and Baghdad to turn to the expertise and knowledge of Iraqi soldiers. General Mohan Hafid al-Fahad is the number two man in what's called the Free Officers and Civilians Movement. He says the Americans will never control Iraq the way they're doing it now.
Imagine that if tanks are moving in the streets, there will be security. This is just a power show. We are sorry that Americans would be killed every day, and Iraqis also. America should reconsider after dissolving the army, fix these mistakes that has been a result from dissolving the army. And we told the Americans, we have a plan. Can be executed in order to keep security in Iraq. We have met the officials who are responsible, Ambassador Bremer's office. We told him the movement is ready to take over security in Iraq, Baghdad as a first stage, and in Iraq as a second stage. And they haven't answered us yet. The Americans in 6 months haven't heard this, what I'm saying. The Iraqis are convinced that the Americans and their friends in Iraq are closing their ears from hearing. We wish these ears would be open so that no choppers will be shut down again and no casualties will be happening. The security in Iraq is the responsibility of Iraqis. And they are more capable than Iraqis to control security.
Today we have three senior members of the Iraqi military here in our Baghdad studio to answer your questions. Should the Iraqi army be put back to work? If senior Iraqi officers and soldiers were back in uniform, could that be the answer to security problems in this country? Or is it a dangerous move? Does it raise the possibility that Iraqi soldiers might clash with American forces? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, just a couple of notes before we begin. The first is that we invite you to our website, www.theconnection.org, and you can see pictures of the people that you're hearing on today's program. And just a second program note, you should probably know Baghdad's in the midst of some very strong winds and rain and blowing sand, and it might interrupt our satellite connection. We will persevere, though. I'd like to now introduce my three guests. I have with me in the Connection Baghdad studio, Air Force Colonel Hashim Hassan Ali. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And also from the Iraqi Navy, Commodore Raad Fadel Alani. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And Brigadier General Dr. Tariq Jassim Alani is also joining us.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you all here. Now, you have all said that it was a mistake to dismiss the Iraqi army. Why was it such a mistake?
Well,
It is a mistake. As far as I know, and in concern of this aspect, any country who wants to protect his future, his reconstruction program, his institutions, his stability, his ministerial acts or actions, wants a force of protection. Now, you can't protect a country with a show business, whatever the force which is behind this show business. Actually, the American forces, when they came, the coalition forces, they were very, very much greeted by the Iraqi people to prove that the army itself was not willing to fight. There was no fighting will in the army. That was a victory for the U.S. and also victory for the Iraqi people, because they came to liberate this country from a very bad ex-regime. And everybody in the world knows what has happened and what this man has done in Iraq. Now, we have seen many coups before, 1985, 58, 1963, etc. In all these coups, the army was still there. The army took hand immediately after the coup.
Okay, but now we're talking about internal coups here. In this case, Hashim, we're talking about the invasion of a foreign army. It seems to me that maybe it made sense to say to all the Iraqi soldiers, you're finished. Put your guns away. You are no longer soldiers. Why was that a mistake?
Mistake, as Iraqi people, we consider ourselves as officers and soldiers. We represent the dignity of Iraqi people. Iraqi army was established before the establishing of Iraqi government in 1921. And this army represent, as I said before, represent the dignity of Iraqi people. We spend most of our life in serving this army. And, yeah.
Okay, but, Rod, yes. When you joined the Navy, you swore to serve under President Saddam Hussein. Is that not true?
No, I joined the Army in 1975. And that time, the Saddam Hussein is the Prime Minister.
Was the President, yes.
Not the President.
Okay, but when he was President, as a soldier, it was your job to serve him. No?
Yes, it's normally we. One of the most missions of the army is to keep the authorities or the government, but it is not the only mission that the army was revolved. We thought that the army, the most mission of all that must be revolved is to keep the national security. It means to keep.
But it does mean taking orders from Saddam Hussein. It means taking orders from the commander in chief.
Yes, surely.
So the question that people have in their minds is: if you all swore your loyalty to Saddam Hussein, how can people believe that you now have no loyalty to Saddam Hussein? Tariq, maybe you can start off.
Well, what I think this is, the formalities and the actual things. Formalities, officers, they don't swear to Saddam Hussein. Usually they swear to serve their country, prevent enemy action on their country, protect their ground, etc., the air, their sea. What happened actually, the army actually in itself, what I mean by the army is the army, the military, not the presidential guard or special guard, the close guard to Saddam Hussein. Actually it's an academic institution. Even if some officers of it, the leaders of the army, those who has been put by Saddam Hussein, might be they are sincere and loyal to him. But in the inner circles, before the fall of Baghdad, in the army, they are not very happy about Saddam Hussein, and there has been many attempts to outthrow him, and there was failure, and there were executions, and you know about that. So it doesn't mean anything to swear to Saddam Hussein, to serve him. Actually, it is to serve the country. And even when Baghdad fallen, some of the military officers who cried, they cried on their country. They cried on their land. They cried on the fate of the army, which has been collapsed suddenly as such. But they didn't cry on Saddam Hussein. They were happy. This controversy in the mind of everybody should be understood by every listener.
Hashim, you have no loyalty to Saddam Hussein anymore, or at all.
We are I think, and we are sure we are patriotics.
And, Patriots.
And we are loyal to our homeland, to our nation, to our people.
So at this moment, yes, when Iraq is being rebuilt,
yes,
is it difficult for you not to be a part of that, to be told, no, you stay at home, we don't want you? Is that difficult for you?
Yes. To stay at home, it's very difficult. I can't bear it. I spent all my life serving the army, serving my home, my nation, my people. How could I stay at home? I have graduated from three colleges. I want to have my chance to succeed in my life.
And Rod, you have a story. You were in, excuse me, you were in Basra.
Yes.
In late March.
Yes.
You were working as Commodore there.
Yeah.
And were you ready to fight the Americans at that time? Were you telling your soldiers, okay, this is the big fight, get ready, get ready?
No.
What were you doing?
It's difficult to explain because I am joined the opposition since 1995.
But secretly?
Secretly, of course. Yeah, secretly. How can I announce my job, my secret work? So I follow all the instruction which comes to us from the opposition. This is one. Second one that we have.
So the opposition...
We follow the feeling of our nations that refusing this regime, they are able to contact the U.S. government, U.S. allied forces, to change the regimes. So as I worked in Basra, I follow the instruction which comes to us from the opposition, and also I can read the eyes of all soldiers and officers. They want to finish this joke quickly.
They didn't want to fight.
Yes, they didn't.
They wanted to go home.
Yes, for this reason.
And as your as commander, you were willing to let them go home.
Yes.
Let me stop for you for a minute.
Yes.
In a way, you helped the Americans.
Yes.
In a way, yes.
In a way, I helped them.
So when the American says to you in May, that's it, you're finished, you have no job, go home, it's not really a very big thank you.
Yes. I didn't think so, because I've joined the opposition. As I know, according to the information which comes to us, the U.S. Allied forces will come as a liberation forces, not an invasion forces. So we gave him all our cooperation with them. But suddenly we hear that we must go to home.
I need to stop you.
Without any realistic causes.
Let me just stop you. We have to take a short break.
Yes.
Listeners, I remind you our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. Your opportunity now to speak to officers in the Iraqi army. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection, live from Baghdad. Joining me in the studio here from the Iraqi Navy, Commodore Rod Fadl al-Ani from the Iraqi Air Force, Colonel Hashim Hassan Ali from the Iraq Army, Brigadier General Tariq Jassim al-Ani. And they are all here to take your questions and to talk with us about moves that are underway right now, discussions that are underway now at the Pentagon and the White House and here in Baghdad, to perhaps begin bringing some of the Iraqi officers and the Iraqi soldiers back into an effort to control the security situation in Iraq. And just before we went to our break, Hashim, we were talking about telling the soldiers not to fight and thinking that that was doing a favor for the United States. Did you see it that way?
We considered American soldiers as friends and not conquerors. Because if you consider them as conquerors, we're not going to treat them peacefully. We're not going to receive them. We will going to fight. But I by myself heard Mr. President Bush, his speech, he said that day by day, Iraqi people are closer to their freedom. And we thought that American soldiers help us in getting our freedom, no more. But we do not accept them as conquerors. We accept them as friends.
But Tariq, I mean, the American soldiers were fighting their way up from Basra. There was opposition. Yep. It was impossible for the U.S. to know if they were being fired at by the Mukhabarat, the intelligence, or Saddam's Fedayeen, or the Republican Guard, or the army. You know what I mean? It's all just opposition to an army coming in.
Yeah, this happened at my home, actually. My home is in touch with the main road to the airport, quite in touch with. And in our mews, in our little street, everybody left. We stayed there, two or three families. The bombardment continued. Now, the opposition to the Americans in the south, everybody was frightened what will happen in Baghdad. Now, as far as we are civilized people, educated people, we instructed our families. This is true, I'm telling you. I told my family, what happened in the south, it will be much easier in Baghdad. And they said, how? I told them, look, son, the first thing, America will try to drop their troops in the airport. And when it happened, my son asked me, Dad, how did you know about that? I said, this is educated people. How would think about it? And I said, next thing, the resistance will collapse within a day or two, and you will be happy. They said, but the opposition and the fighting in the south is so much. I said, you will see what will happen. And it will happen as we imagined. This is, I think, answer in a story.
We have joining us now on the line from the United States, Kenneth Allard. He's a retired former Army colonel, author of an upcoming book, Business as War. And Kenneth, I want to bring you in on this part of the conversation. If the Iraqi officers, such as the gentleman in the Baghdad studio with me right now, were to be brought back in, is that the logical way to solve the security situation that exists today, particularly in Baghdad, but also in the Sunni Triangle?
Well, you have three choices. You either bring those gentlemen back in and reconstitute the Iraqi army, or you bring in allies, or you do it yourself. And those basically are some pretty stark choices. By the way, the task that we faced in Iraq, was not so much, disbanding the Iraqi army. It disbanded itself. In many respects, whether they were with the opposition or were simply trying to find the most convenient way home, they simply melted away. And so in one sense, that is good, because that saved, frankly, a lot of unnecessary loss of life. But what it means is that in many respects, you have to take whatever you want to create and recreate that from the ground up. And that is a very daunting task.
But Ken, what hurt people, particularly in the army in Iraq, was the announcement from Ambassador Bremer, who said, the army is finished, nobody will be paid, and people who had expected to contribute in some way to the security felt that they were being somehow let down. And I'm wondering if in your experience there's any precedent for the situation that we're looking at. What happened?
Well, bluntly, I feel that that was a very ill-advised move, and I would just have to tell you that that is entirely consistent with the administration's record on reconstituting Iraq. One has the feeling they are literally making this up as they go along. Surely there are some major issues to be faced to ensure that whatever force we put in place there has no remnant of the Saddam regime, that it in fact represents the Iraqi people and not that former regime. Those are important issues, and they do have to be faced. But there are other ways of doing that besides saying, fellows, you have no possible contribution to make to the future of what is your country. I think that the statement that was made that the U.S. has to realize that it comes in as a liberator and not as a conqueror. That is the beginning of wisdom. It is very, very tough to maintain that viewpoint in the midst of having to deal with the opposition, but it's one of the major challenges that you face in a situation like Iraq.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Let's take our first call now from Dalton. Dalton's calling in from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Dalton. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you. My question is, this network of opposition, it sounds like those folks are still available and able to talk to one another. Is there any sort of movement in that group or parallel activity that could benefit the American forces?
When you talk about the opposition, Dalton, what exactly are you talking about? The people who were the opposition within the army prior to the departure of Saddam Hussein?
Exactly.
This
yes,
movement
exactly.
that we're talking about is I mean, it has a political name in Iraq. It's called the Free Civilian or Free Officers and Civilian Movement. It's a political party. Mm-hmm. It includes, as I understand it, it includes civilians and officers.
Yes,
is that
yes,
right?
Yes.
And is this the movement, Dalton's asking, is this the movement that the U.S. can use to build itself an Iraqi force?
Definitely. Yes, of course.
But why should it just use this one political party? Why not say, we are open now to bringing back all Iraqi officers?
In our movement, we have many officers. The major part of officers will join this movement because of his aims and his objects, and because of the history of this leader, the leadership who's built this movement.
Yes, our movement is a specialist with officers, and not only officers. Warrant officers, soldiers, surgeons.
And also civilians, of course.
All yes. civilians.
Well, what I should say that on what Mr. Kenneth has said, that regime was a total regime. When it collapsed, the whole ministers, internal, foreign office, military, the defense, all has collapsed with it because it was a total regime. Then the mistake came when Mr. Bremer said that the army should be dismantled. This is the mistake. On Mr. Dalton, I have to say that it's not a difficult job. This movement, as far as it is, and other movements or other military, clean military officers, patriots, Mr. Bremer can choose an advisory committee might be linked to the governing council.
That's exactly
government
that.
Council. This advisory committee from the military should be in touch with Iraqis, not Mr. Bremer, and advise the governing council on future future army, how it should be collected from clean people, not loyal to Saddam, and that's not a difficult job, and it's an easy job. We have two sides moving. One, Mr. Bremer, the other is the governing council, and the third one is the advisory military council, which should be chosen.
And the fourth one is Dalton, who is still on the line in Spokane, Washington.
Yes, of course.
Dalton, let me come. Do you think that this is a logical way of resolving the security situation, even if we're only talking about the safety of Americans?
Well, it would sure make sense to take advantage of an existing infrastructure, I guess, of if they were able to communicate under such repression. It would seem simple now to be a major force in the activity that's occurring.
Dalton, thanks very much for your call. I'm going to switch over now to Douglas, who's joining us on the line from Boston. Hi, Douglas.
Hello, Dick. Hello.
Yes, I hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. First of all, thank you for taking my call. My question is for Hashem and Tariq, especially. I'm curious, while it makes a lot of sense to me, and it's certainly a fascinating idea to have those who knew the infrastructure of the country militarily come back in and help out, I also understand that under the prior regime, oaths were sworn both to Saddam and to the Almighty that you would defend both the country and Saddam. Now, with Saddam in hiding, what happens if Saddam is found? Where do the allegiances lie? I'll take my answer off the air.
Douglas, thanks for your call.
May I get the question clear from you?
If Saddam were to reappear with his own force, would the oath of loyalty that Iraqi officers swear mean that some would be obliged to once again go with Saddam?
I don't think so, no.
No. We are not obliged to go with Saddam again. No. Who said that?
If he came back.
Even if he came back.
I think this is a dream. History don't go back at all. Doesn't go back.
It's nonsense.
But let's talk about some of the practicalities here, though. If you were all brought into the CPA compound here in Baghdad and questioned, are you loyal to Saddam Hussein? You say no. Are you willing to fight for a free Iraq? You say yes. And they say, are you willing to take your orders from an American commander? Because the Americans aren't going to create two parallel forces here in Iraq. There won't be the Iraqi army under its own command and the American army. Will Iraqi officers be willing to take their instructions from American commanders?
Mr. Dick, could I ask you a question? What's the coalition forces want?
What do they want more than anything else?
What's they want?
What do you think?
Why they came here? I ask you. Please, I want to. Because I don't have the answer.
Sorry, as we thought, Mr. Dickens.
No, it's okay.
As I thought, they came to us for free Iraq.
To help us?
Yes, for free
to,
Iraq.
To get our freedom. Okay.
Till now, we expect that our coalition forces, especially the United U.S. forces, was come to us to free Iraq from our regime. As I told Mr. The question of Douglas, Mr. Douglas, about the regime when he reappeared, the problem is not reappearing the person, the Saddam exactly is a person. What we intended to told Mr. Douglas and also to Douglas, that Saddam. As a person, he's a person. He must think. Maybe he found himself. He commit many mistakes, and he want to try to reappear again with another ideas, another regimes, another peaceful. No, this is the problem. The problem about us is what he committed in the past. Many mistakes.
I want to talk about that, Raj, but I want to find out, Hashim, why you're asking this question.
Yes.
Why are the forces here? Because you have something you want to say.
I know very well that coalition forces helped us, and we're thankful for them, and we'll be very grateful. But
what's next?
We would like to have the security in our hand. No one could ensure security in Iraq unless the army, Iraqi army, the old Iraqi army, not the new Iraqi army.
Why?
Because they have experience, a long experience, and they, all of them, well-trained.
Okay, but give an example to me. Let's say
they fought for more than 20 years.
Let's say that you had a force of men, and you were sent to Fallujah, and told to get the people there to stop firing rockets at American helicopters, to stop blowing up American. What would you do differently? What would you do that the Americans cannot do?
Yes, but because we consider the coalition forces as conquerors and not friends.
But my question is, what would you do that's different from what the Americans are
they
doing
They might
now?
Be, Fallujah, may, might be. Some of the resistance, they consider it's they are conqueror forces, occupation forces, and they fight in this imagination. Now, Iraqi army knows the language problem, the members that can intrude inside the city, into the houses, into the families, and they know every bit of every aspect of every. Now, America doesn't know every bit.
Okay, but Tariq, they might just attack you because they see you as collaborating with the Americans.
Mr. Dick, many citizens from Fallujah City told me personally that they are not love Saddam Hussein and they fight. No, they fight because they love their home.
City home.
They sit the city. they would like to have their dignity.
This
they
is
don't
one of the...
like to see conquerors or unlike persons in their towns.
So. Let's go back to the phone lines if we can. We've got a new caller. Douglas, thanks for your call. Next to Natick, Massachusetts, and Fawad is joining us. Fawad, hi, go ahead. Yeah.
Hi, Dick. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a Pakistani-American, and I was against the Iraq war because I personally thought it was irrelevant to the war on terror. But one thing that's missing from the conversation here is that all the gentlemen here seem to be suggesting that they were the loyal defense forces of Iraq and really had very little connection to Saddam Hussein, but this really was a criminal army. It attacked Iran. It attacked Kuwait. And I am personally familiar with several families that were affected very deeply by Iraqi armies looting in Kuwait and so on and so forth. So to really say that this is a straightforward decision, that these people should be brought back to control Iraq once the American forces have gone in and removed the regime, is really taking too much on trust. And figuring out what the leaders of this particular army
Yes.
who were loyal to Saddam
yes.
versus people who were really
yes.
in the opposition
yes.
to Saddam is a very, very difficult question to answer.
I need a very brief answer from you, Hashim, and then we'll take a break and come back and complete the answer to Fawad's question.
The army, Iraqi army, is not an independent establishment. We are in a country, and we have leadership, and we have commanders. And we are soldiers and officers, just get an orders.
1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK for you to join today's conversation. We are live from Baghdad with three senior officers of the Iraqi military in our Baghdad studio. Your opportunity to speak to them. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection live from Baghdad. Live from Baghdad, you're listening to The Connection. My name is Dick Gordon. With me in the Baghdad studio from the Iraqi Army, Brigadier General Tariq Jassim Alani, from the Iraqi Air Force, Colonel Hashim Hassan Ali, from the Iraq Navy, we have Commodore Raad Fadel Al-Ani. And we are talking about moves, suggestions, ideas that the Iraqi Army, the Iraqi military could be reconstituted in some form to deal with the security situation here. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, your invitation to join us in this conversation. But before we do that, gentlemen, Fawad has put a really important point on the table. If you look at the history of the last 20 years, if we go through the history as it's seen in the West, there is the use of chemical weapons, in the Iran-Iraq war, there is the use of chemical weapons against the Kurds in the north and the purges there, a brutal repression of Shiites in the south of Iraq, the invasion of Kuwait with people killed and imprisoned there. Some of them are still missing now. And these were all things that involved the security forces of this country, the security forces that are right now saying, let us back into our work. Now, it's not good enough to say, Hashim, we were just taking orders. The senior officers with the Nazi party said we were just taking orders at the Nuremberg trial, and it wasn't good enough. So what's the explanation that you can give that the army, that the military, needs or should have the right to once again serve this country?
I'd like to comment on Mr. Fuad. Actually, my colleague Hashim and myself were retired since 1990, but still we lived the events of Kuwait and the Gulf War. When Saddam entered Kuwait, he entered with his own forces, the Presidential Guard forces.
The Republican Guard.
Republican Guard. Republican Guard, you're right.
And the chief of staff of Iraqi army had no any information till he listened to the news from the radio. Look at that. This man is a very security-minded man. Now, military in Kuwait, military in Iran, they have certain execution brigades behind them. Anybody who will not execute his orders will be shot on the spot. They like killing so much. When the army was defeated after a desert war.
Go ahead.
The first Gulf War.
Yes.
A lot of army officers joined the civilian uprising, and some of them went abroad, ran away. They escaped because they knew that if they caught, they will be executed.
So you're making the point here, Tariq, that
there were
a number of different security organizations.
Yes, right. Colonel Sajid, for example, is a general. He was a leader of a major division in Kuwait. This is a true story. And one of his rest hours with his doctor of the division, he's my friend, he told me that Colonel Sajid was walking with me in the desert after lunch. He started crying. I looked at him. I said, "What happened, sir?" He said, I am very sorry. I can't tolerate what we have done in Kuwait, inside Kuwait." He was crying. This man, Kamil Sajid, later was executed by Saddam because of trying to attempt a coup against him. I mean, it's very intermingled. You can't make a clear cut that the army should stand against Saddam and everybody will follow the officers. This is a very difficult. He is infiltrating the army with his spies.
Thousands of officers were fired from the army because they did not...
We've been listening to Dick Gordon live in Baghdad, listeners. His line is failing, possibly due to heavy sandstorms in Baghdad today. And we'll get it back up in just a few minutes. Dick has been speaking with a number of retired officers, senior figures in the Iraqi military. Admiral Raad Fadel, Colonel, Air Force Colonel Hashim Hassan Ali, and retired Brigadier General Tariq Jasmin Al-Ani. I'm turning now to Kenneth Allard, retired Army colonel and military analyst at Georgetown University and author of the forthcoming book Business as War. Hello, Ken.
How are you?
I'm fine. Now, we've been listening to this. We've been listening to these men, in a sense, kind of defend the history of the Iraqi military.
Yes, it was. A bit, shall we say, self-serving. Okay. It reminds me an awful lot of my own time in Germany. In the 1970s, and there it was possible to, we worked with Germans all the time, and a surprising number of them had only fought on the Russian front. You could not find anybody that ever would admit to having fought on the Western front against us. And I think you're getting a lot of that same line from the Iraqis right now, that a lot of people didn't like the invasion of Kuwait, a lot of people didn't like everything that was done with the Iranians, and you can understand why now they're saying all of those things, trying to dissociate themselves from Saddam and the evil acts of his regime.
Ken, we have got our men in Baghdad back up with us. Dick, I'm going to hand back over to you.
Thanks very much, Michael Goldfarb, catching us there as our satellite communication was momentarily interrupted. But we did have an opportunity to listen to Ken Allard saying that this happens, that when an army is defeated, everybody says, "Oh, no, I wasn't in Kuwait," or I didn't have anything to do with use of chemical gas. You can't say, though, Hashim, that everyone in the army has clean hands, can you?
I can't say.
Not everybody, that, no.
Not everybody. Not everybody. But you know, Mr. Dick, that hundreds of officers whom they born in the middle area and south area of Iraq, all of them, most of them were fired from the army. Why? Because they either participate in the uprising of 1991 or they refused to support the offensive of Saddam to invade Kuwait. We did not like to or would not support the invasion of our army to Kuwait. But if we say no, anyone say no, if anyone object, he will be hanged.
Let me interrupt.
Yes, I can.
My colleague, he's a son of my brother, Raad, Commodore Raad. This is an example to answer the questionnaire. who is talking now. His father, one of the...
Your brother?
My brother, yes. Yeah. His father, my brother, one of the activists. One of the activists. And he was a military. He was a lieutenant colonel. He was put to jail in a special intelligence prison. He was tortured for many years, committed to execution. The execution was changed because he was innocent from the allegation that they throw on him. He came out from prison. He was losing all the nails of his feet and hand. And his son was regarded as an opposition to the in the army. Also, me, after that, I was put to the retirement list because of my brother. And others in our family has suffered because of one man.
Let's go back.
Is Saddam.
Let's go back to our telephone lines. Yeah. Joining us now from Raleigh, North Carolina, is Jeff. Hi, Jeff. We hear you. Go ahead.
Hi. Assalamu alaikum and Ramadan Mubarak.
Alaikum salam.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Peace be upon you.
Alhamdulillah. I wanted to ask you, everybody, what you think of the U.S. and the coalition's assertion that these attacks are coming from outside forces and not from internal Iraqi units. And a second comment, or a comment, is that a lot of what was going on with the Iran-Iraq war and with the Kurds was, if not facilitated by the U.S. was somewhat complicit in it. And I can take my answer off the air.
All right, Jeff, yes. We're going to deal with the first part of your question here in terms of who it is who's currently attacking the U.S. forces in Baghdad, in Iraq. Your assessment, gentlemen, of this.
The resistance.
Yes.
The resistance.
There are many factions.
You want to...
They are Iraqis.
You want to specify their identities.
Well, Jeff is wondering if they're mainly foreigners, people from
not
Yemen...
Not foreigners. Iraqi people.
No, it's mixed.
No, it's a mixed.
Mixed.
To my imagination, they are mixed. Some are Iraqis. Some are extremists, Islamic extremists. Some of them, they are being harmed because of Saddam. They were Saddam loyalists from the intelligence, from the Republican army, etc., from the security, who has lost their jobs, their salaries. Now they are fighting because of salaries and because of the ex-regime.
And some of them,
yes,
are former military men. This much we know because
some
they're
of
very
them
good.
Are former, you are right, yes, yes. Quite right. The others, the design of the attacks is linked, the design, I mean, is linked very closely to Al-Qaeda. The design, the type. What I meant, in the first day of Ramadan, I imagine the tower, the Trade Tower in New York, and the Pentagon, and other airport, they were hit at the same time by many planes. Now, in the first day of Ramadan, many police stations were hit in the same hour by many bombed cars.
Like a tactic of Al-Qaeda.
A tactic of Al-Qaeda.
Let me add many shots in one time.
But that does not mean that all the resistors from outside Iraq. No.
I understand this.
Yes, regard us because we are studying this situation, especially now in movement. We have many type of resistance. The first resistance, we can divide this resistance in two parts. One, a legal resistance, and the other, we can consider that illegal resistance because they are fighting not in their lands. So, the legal resistance, as you know, we are here, Muslims, Arabs, we fight for four reasons: for the land, for the money, for the religious, and for the
religion.
Religion and for the
honor.
Honor.
So,
let me stop you if I can, there, Rod, because Kenneth Allard is still with us on the telephone line, and I just want to go back to him before we get too close to the end of the program. Ken, your assessment of the likelihood of senior Iraqi officers and Iraqi soldiers being brought back specifically to deal with the security situation, but specifically to put an Iraqi face on the security forces in this country. What do you think is going to happen?
It's very important.
I think that this discussion is amply documented and probably amplified the difficulty of trying to figure out just who was doing what back when, and then gauging also the political reliability for the future. That is a very tough task, and it was not Mr. Bremer who disintegrated the army. They did that themselves. So in reconstituting it and dealing with this question of loyalty and the question of legitimacy, I think what you have to do is to specifically put them to work. I mean, I hear all the good intentions around the table. And if, in fact, those can be brought to the task at hand, which is, indeed, finding Saddam, eliminating the potential Iraqi sources of opposition, and turning this back over to the Iraqis themselves. To the extent that this group of officers can contribute to that, I'm sure that their contributions will be welcome. They certainly should be.
So, how is it to be done? If we have established that some former members of the military are with the resistance, some former members of the military have dirty hands from their time under Saddam, how does the United States know that Tariq or Hashim or Raad, when they come to volunteer their services, they really want to work for their country? How do they know?
Sorry, can I ask you? Depending upon following the patriotic military officers which have good reputations, clean reputations, and also high experience and skill in their jobs.
And Hashim, is that easy to do, to make those determinations about how good the people are?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
You make it sound very simple.
Yes, because I agree with the Brigadier Raad. What he says is very correct.
It's not difficult, Mr. Dick. It's not difficult because the U.S. Allied forces, U.S. Forces, and also the coalition forces have a confidence with the parties and the movements.
We're short on time. A last word, Tariq, from you. How can they trust the people who say they want to serve?
Any Iraqi officer or a military officer, by nature, he's a good servant of the country. By nature. I mean, you can find a lot of officers who are, by nature, even if they were a senior members in the Iraqi army, now they can serve loyally because they are by nature a very good officers and loyalists.
And
it is good to try it. It's worth trying it.
Because nothing else is working right now.
Yeah, of course.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for coming in to be with us on the program. We're out
thank
of time.
So
thanks
much.
To
thank you
Kenneth
so
Allard, who's retired former U.S. Army colonel, author of the upcoming book Business as War. Here in the studio with me, Commodore Raad Fadel Al-Ani, Colonel Hashim Hassan Ali, Brigadier General Tariq Jassim Al-Ani. Thanks today for help from producer in Baghdad, Mark Allard, and to the whole Connection staff and our engineers at WBUR. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad.
Thank you.